Thursday, June 28, 2012, and welcome to episode 133 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Well, welcome again to another episode of Tech Talk for Teachers, and we've got a few things lined out for you this week. So, first of all, I think we have up the Linux Challenge. Second, we have up our summer reading list, so we thought we'd share some of the books that we're currently reading and also some that are on our to-read list out there. So we'll be sharing some of those picks with you. Summertime's a great time to catch up on some of our reading. So
it is.
We'll share some of that. We'll also share June was a huge month with technology conferences.
So many things going on all across the country.
So we'll share a little bit of news from Apple, Microsoft, and Google. And I think we even mentioned Amazon Kindle in there a couple of times.
We did. And ISTE.
And the ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education Conference, going on right now. And then we'll wrap it up with our technology picks of the week. Welcome to our Linux Challenge segment. And with us again today is Dr. Rich, and we're going to talk a little bit about some educational apps that are available with Linux.
We are.
So let's see. Last time you were just getting your feet wet with the basic operating system and found it quite similar to Windows and Mac.
I did. It was very simple to use. You know, as long as they've got those familiar icons and navigation bars, I seem to do okay. And so I was really pleased whenever I discovered that. And then went in to find the apps, and they've got a nice selection of apps and a lot of free apps, very important to schools.
And the app store, it's called Ubuntu One. And I made the mistake last time. I need to slow down a little bit because sometimes when you're familiar with these, it just kind of rolls off the tongue. But a couple of listeners had talked to me. It's like, you were kept saying Ubuntu, and it's U-B-U-N-T-U, Ubuntu. And also, if you have any questions as we do the show and things, we do provide show notes. So make sure you go out there and check the show notes because we have several links about some of the things that we talk about. So last time you found the App Store, and then we installed, I believe, last time Stellarium. But now then you've got a couple of new ones, and I think I mentioned a couple of elementary level programs because we want to focus this on some things that schools can use.
Right.
And the great thing about this is these apps were 100% free. So what did you go ahead and install?
The first one I did was Tuck Type.
Okay, Tuck's the Linux Penguin. Have you gotten the Penguin connection yet?
I've not.
Okay.
You want to explain it to me?
Yeah,
actually,
it goes
Tux, not Tuck.
Yeah, T-U-X, like the little tuxedo. So you have the black and white penguin, and that's just kind of an ongoing Linux theme. And the story goes, Linus Torvalds, who was the inventor of Linux or came up with the Linux kernel, back in the early 90s was visiting a zoo, and a penguin attacked him.
Oh.
So he just decided, well, we'll just make the penguin our Linux mascot.
There you go. You got to love somebody that can laugh at themselves and make the best of a bad situation.
Yeah. So it just kind of stuck over the years. So whenever you see the little penguin symbol, that's kind of the universal symbol out there, and it's been that way forever. And he's lovingly got the name of Tux, T-U-X.
Very nice.
So he's in his little tuxedo there. So you said Tux.
Tux Typing.
That's a great one, to, you know, for somebody starting out learning to type. So what did you find out?
Well, it had a couple of different options. One was a fish, with, you know, of course, Tux needs fish to eat. And so it was just a simple keyboarding exercise game. And it was very cool because you could choose different levels, how difficult, or from easy to difficult, and then a whole selection of words. So even if you have, you know, students that are early stages of reading, you can pick words that they're going to recognize, and that's going to help them.
Yeah, help with spelling.
Absolutely. And so you had that one, and then there's also a comet zap where you shoot lasers at the words when they come down. But the graphics were great. I mean, it worked smoothly. I could see where students would absolutely get a kick out of this.
And it keeps your score.
It does.
Kind of in a game environment.
Yep. But again, very easy to use. And one of the things I just kept thinking with this is, as schools are saying, you know, we're getting new technology, but we don't have enough for some of our classes, there's no reason why schools can't take some of those older computers and put these programs on there when it's all free.
Right.
And to use it. So it's such an awesome option for schools.
Yeah, if nothing else than just that touch typing program itself, because there are commercial programs, but as you said, school budgets and things, what they are these days, here's a free option.
Sure. And instead of putting those old computers in a surplus room, or, you know, we've seen them where they're in the closet and nobody's using them, and then they get outdated. And so, you know, bring those out. Let them get a few more years of life.
Yeah, I really like Tux typing. Back a few years ago, I don't know if you ever did it, but Mario, remember
yes.
Mario was, we had Mario typing. I don't know if you ever remember that.
I do.
He had to type fast enough that he could swim away from the sharks and everything. So that's a great motivator for students. It's like, oh, I've got to get Mario out of here. And the same thing with Tux typing with some of the some of the games, the lasers.
Feed him the fish and shoot the lasers and that, and you know, it's not, the background was just a basic background, it was like a photograph they had that they pulled in, so it wasn't distracting. And that's what you want, because we want the focus of the activity to be learning to keyboard. In this one, there's also Tux Math and that, and so I think, you know, it's not bells and whistles, but it's not super distracting,
right?
And that's something that's valuable. And so, and again, downloaded piece of cake, ran piece of cake. I mean, just like every other computer I've ever used. No difference because of the operating system.
Yeah, an operating system does basic things, so this one's just doing a little bit differently out there. And with the open source community and, you know, these legions of programmers out there, they're out there constantly making a lot of new programs. So glad you're still going with it. We'll give it a try. We'll see next month if we can come up with another app, or, you know, some issues and problems that you may have with the App Store and things out there. There's certainly a lot to explore.
There is. And I mean, there were things, you know, periodic table and that. So it's like, okay, it runs the full gamut from early learners to upper grade levels and more complicated content. And so I thought, you know, I'd like to look in that and just see what was available for older students as well.
Now, we mentioned last time Ubuntu is just one distribution, and there's literally hundreds of distributions, but specifically for education, they kind of make these different flavors, and I think I mentioned last time Edubuntu.
Yes.
That one has, like, Tux typing and thing already built into a CD, so whenever you install the operating system, originally, not only do you get Linux, but you get all these extra educational programs all into one. So it makes it a little bit easier to manage, you know, as you're installing. And the other thing I do like about it, so much today, our society seems that we're moving into, you know, buying these things but never touch them, never repair. They're not made to be repaired anymore. And I really think we're doing our students a disservice if we, you know, if we don't explore how things are made. You know, that's how our next generations are going to flourish. So that curiosity and things out there with students, Linux is a great operating system to explore some of those possibilities.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And any life we can get out of what we've purchased already.
Yes.
Is a good thing. So, it, you know, we do treat a lot of things like they're disposable, and we're tossing them a little too early because we want something smaller or sleeker or whatever.
The next great thing.
So. Yeah. So I'm still digging it.
All right, now then I'd like to go for our book section, and this time I always like to pick two or three books over the summertime, kind of have a reading schedule out there. Not that it ever slows down, but I guess if it's a slower time, summer, but
and,
it really is not.
And you're a fan of audiobooks, correct?
I love audiobooks.
Right.
Because I can be doing other things out there. And, you know, I do a lot of farming and things, so I spend a lot of time on a tractor. So it's kind of easy for me to go out there and listen and learn and
multitasking.
Yeah. But I just finished one, and this is a bit of a challenging book. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. And I just finished this one up, and actually I did. I used Eastern's Overdrive service, and that's been one of our technology picks of the week before, but I downloaded the audio version, and I didn't stop to add up how many, but it's probably a 10 or 12 hour audio book to listen to. And we can read a lot faster than we can listen. I like to do both, but just for sheer practicality of it, I can take advantage of those audiobooks, you know, driving down the road, windshield time and things like that. So
absolutely.
I can kind of squeeze a little bit more in the day. But if you're here on Eastern's campus, you know, and have a library card, I think they only have one copy that can check out at a time, and it can be checked out for up to 2 weeks. And then whenever it's checked back in, you know, if you're on a waiting list, the next right. person gets it. But like I said, it's probably at least 10, 12 hours long.
Wow.
It is a bit challenging, but Daniel Kahneman was awarded the Nobel Prize in Economics, I think back in 2002, for decision making. And he comes from a statistics background. And I think this is an excellent book for educators because we're always looking about different perspectives on teaching and learning. And the premise of this book is, you know, thinking fast and slow. He introduces two systems, which has a lot of scientific study behind it. He calls them System 1, which is the fast part,
okay.
and System 2, which is the slow part. Two psychologists, instead of calling it System 1, System 2, they think they called it Type 1 and Type 2 thinking. But anyway, System 1 is the fast thinking or the more intuitive thinking. So things that kind of come natural to us, our first impressions and things are System 1. And then he contrasts that with System 2, which is kind of our analytical, effortful. It takes effort to think.
The processing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if I say, you know, what's 2 plus 2? You know, everybody says 4. Well, that's a System 1 automatic. But if I say, what's 17 times 24? let me get out my notepad, you know, and figure that out. That's a little bit more effortful. But he talks about how one system can lead astray the other system. And he gives some examples. You know, we're all familiar with optical illusion. He talks about cognitive illusions and gives some examples out there. That was one thing that was interesting on Overdrive, first time I've ran across this. He had a number of figures. So you'd be listening to the audiobook. He'd refer to figure 13.
Right.
And he'd say, tell me which line is longer. Well, if you're in the tractor and you know you don't have the book in front of you, you can't participate in that exercise.
That's true.
So part of that Overdrive, when I downloaded it, there was also an option to download the PDF.
Oh, nice.
Which was all of the figures, which was kind of cool. Unfortunately, I didn't have it. Usually, whenever they were mentioning turn to this figure, I didn't have it with me. But the advantage is I could hit pause, you know, go get it, whatever.
Right.
But it was a very interesting book. It is challenging. Talks about what the curse of familiarity. Just consider things that are familiar with us, things right. that are top of mind. He talks about what you know is all there is. So whether you have complete information or not, you are limited by the knowledge at the current time.
And that frames your decision
exactly.
or your reaction.
Yeah. And he's constantly going back and forth and framing some of those and uses some examples out there, how groupthink affects us.
Oh, sure.
And going through it. So there's a lot of psychology, and he kind of takes it from a statistics background since he's an economist. You know, I just found that an excellent read and just all kinds of educational applications out there. So it is a bit more challenging, but I would highly recommend that one. So that's one.
Not only does it make us think about how our students think, but it makes us look at ourselves and understand why we're reacting to different situations different ways.
Yeah, and I mean, as I was going through, and both reading and listening to it, just pausing and think about what we're doing in the classrooms, and talks about advertisers and how prevalent. Yeah. And, you know, that's the other thing that I really do worry about with our students today with a lot of these Web 2.0 services, because with all the screen time that they get, just constantly being bombarded by advertisements.
Right.
And, you know, what type of long-term effects is that going to have? And we're always talking about critical thinking and higher-order thinking skills,
right.
that there's a lot that we can do in deconstructing, you know, just kind of just taking a time out and saying, hey, wait a second, what are we doing out there? And really starting to deconstruct some of that.
And you're right, see how that's influencing.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening. That is interesting. And that ties into the book that I was going to talk about next. It's a book that's a few years old. It was written in 2005. And I read it before and read it again. It's a very easy read, different than your book and that, but it's Blink, The Power mm-hmm. of Thinking Without Thinking.
Mm-hmm.
by Malcolm Gladwell.
Which is kind of that systems one in the thinking fast and slow.
Absolutely. And I like how it talks about how we approach things, but it really talks about how we have those moments where we react and we say, you know, it was instinct, or sometimes, you know, people say it was divine intervention or ESP or something like
just
that.
Just a feeling.
Right, exactly. Just
intuition,
feeling.
Yeah.
And that really we can call that, but it's based on our experiences. And, you know, those things like when you drive away and you think, wait a minute, I think I left the iron on, mm-hmm. and you go back home, yeah. and you did.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, that it was this gut intuition from out of the blue. It was because a couple of other times you've left the iron on and you just didn't, you know, and it draws on your experiences.
And just the subconscious.
Right.
And again, in this book, Thinking Fast and Slow, he talks about that and just the importance of thinking and processing.
Right. And these things that are ingrained within mm-hmm. us that we don't consciously think, mm-hmm. but we do, mm-hmm. and how we react to situations, and how, you know, it's when I've worked with teachers in situations who have not used the Library of Congress website, and they will shut down on me because it's new and they're intimidated
and
by it.
And our students do too, because again, reading through that, I'm thinking practical classroom applications there. How do you get beyond that? Because
right.
It takes effort, you know, to move to that system too. And I mean, he even says in the book, you know, we're all lazy creatures out there.
Right.
We want to take the path of least resistance out there. So how, you know, once again, especially, you know, whenever we're chunking things in hour, 45-minute segments.
Exactly.
How do you switch that brain,
right.
you know, let alone 30 brains in the classroom? So lots of challenges.
It is. And to be willing to admit you don't know instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the beauty of technology is you can find out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to help our students and our peers sometimes understand you don't have to BS me with an answer just to give me an answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to say, you know what, my gut is this, but I'm not 100% sure. Let me take some time and do a little research
mm-hmm.
and find out. And mm-hmm. so yeah, the more aware we are of why we think, why we react, and why we do what we do, I think makes us better teachers and better
mm-hmm.
learners.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about not always having the answer and time to pause and think and pick up this. The other one that's on my radar screen, in fact, I bought it off Amazon, so I've downloaded it to the Kindle. This one is called Too Big to Know, Rethinking Knowledge Now That the Facts Aren't Facts. Experts are everywhere, and the smartest person in the room is the room.
I love that title.
And that's by David Weinberger. So I've got that one. Got it loaded on my little Asus ePad transformer, so I've got that ready to go. I just need to make some time to curl up with the tablet and start reading with that. But in this world, I mean, so fast-paced, and I really do think it is such a challenge for us as educators to dig deeper and get to some of that deeper meaning. In the last 2 weeks, just with what little we covered here, the world is changing.
Right.
You know, one of the things, I may do this on Twitter because I've been finding some people out there sharing their kind of like a little book club.
Oh, nice.
And you can like make a little hashtag or something, you know, Too Big to Know, or like abbreviated or something. And then you can get it. I just enjoy bouncing ideas off other people. You know,
right.
we're all social creatures, and I think we learn best together. Well, in fact, in this title, the smartest person in the room is the room. Another one that I'm reading right now, and this one's been out for a while, is The Wisdom of the Crowds.
Oh, yeah. I've not read that, but I'm familiar.
That's like
with
a 2005,
right.
And I never did get around to reading with that one. But once you start going down this road, like this book, they mentioned this, and you got to go check out this. You know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
So that's our book report for this week. Okay, we're back, and there's been a lot of news in June. This month, we'll be in the process of having 3 major announcements by Apple, Microsoft, and Google. So since last podcast, WWDC, which is Apple's Developers Conference, that's gone on, and it seems so long ago now, but they announced their new lineup, and the big news out of Apple was they're coming up with the MacBook Pro, which has the Retina display.
Right.
So that one's out there. there. They're changing their lineup a little bit, and they did drop the education laptop. I'm not sure if they're going to be filling that hole or if they're thinking that the iPad's going to fill that middle or middle to lower ground for education. So right now, really, the only choice for students and educators is the MacBook Air.
And it's interesting to me because they're not offering lower priced items. I mean, they haven't come up with an economy line or anything like that.
And short of the iPad, because what a lot of people are saying, they're still selling the iPad 2, and they've knocked $100 off that, so that's $399, is the affordable line. The issue with that is usually the first thing you do is go out and buy a cover and then buy a keyboard.
Exactly.
So, you know, then you're at $500 pretty quick.
Right.
But, you know, they're out there in the Apple ecosystem. Big news, in the middle of the month, Microsoft had their surprise event out in Los Angeles, and they introduced their tablet, which they're calling the Microsoft Surface.
And that received a lot of press. That was on all of the news programs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of buzz about this tablet.
And it's tied to the Windows 8 operating system, and, you know, we suspect that the Microsoft Surface and Windows 8 and what they're calling their Windows RT tablets, the WinRT tablets, be out in, you know, this fall, probably October, you know, probably no later. They certainly want to hit the Christmas season. So there's a huge changes going on there. But the big news with Microsoft is they've actually branded the hardware itself with Microsoft, which is the first time that they've done that. You know, Apple controls the whole iPad experience.
They make
the hardware and the software. And Google is doing the same thing with their Nexus line. They do what they call a reference model with the hardware and the Android.
Right.
So Microsoft's kind of following suit. And whether this will be a reference design or if they'll stay in the hardware business, everybody's kind of speculating.
If this is a launching point and this is just the first of many things, I'm sure there are many things in development that we don't know about. But yeah, testing the waters to see how this goes.
But a lot of innovation with the Surface. This has been a secret project, I guess, for the last 2 or 3 years, and nobody really saw this one coming. And the big innovation beyond the Windows 8 operating system was the keyboard cover.
Right.
Which, you know, it's a cover, but if you fold it down, it's actually a keyboard.
And I think, you know, a lot of people have bought those for their iPads, so depending on what the price is and how this is, a lot of us appreciate being able to have everything in one package.
Yeah. They've not announced pricing or availability yet. They're just saying they'll be competitively priced. But, you know, there's a worry that all the innovations and additions and things that they're making, you know, they're probably looking at the Ultrabook price range, which is anywhere from $600 to $1,200. And, you know, is that going to be competitive against the iPad? Where they're at now. So, you know, the jury's certainly still out on that, but just a huge amount of development going on right now as Microsoft as they gear up. For schools, some of the benefits, they're going to be coming out with the Intel-based tablets, which essentially is a full PC, so there will be no compromises. Any program that you can run on a PC, you'll be able to run on the tablet. Another innovation, they've incorporated their pen input using a stylus.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, for a decade, Microsoft has been doing the tablet PCs. So now they're bringing that into the Surface line, in the Intel line. I'm not sure that it's going to be there in the lower-end tablet, the WinRT tablets, or not.
I'm curious. I'm looking at the Surface right now. It looks like I can't tell. It looks like a USB port.
I believe there is a USB port.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, which is huge for me because, you know, I have my Android tablet and it has a USB port. And that, to me, to be able to share, swap, copy
easily,
that's an advantage over the iPad because the iPad has none of those external ports.
No, and it really does just add an extra step to everything you do.
Right. So, you know, whenever you're doing that, it's like, okay, how do I get just something simply as word processing, how do I get that lesson to the teacher?
Right.
Well, email it, make an attachment, plug it in, sync it to iTunes, you know, whatever, but it is that extra step.
Right.
And then the third big conference going on, you know, we're recording this near the end of June. Cindy's going to be traveling again, so we'll do this a little bit early this month. But at Google I.O., at their I.O. conference, and we'll have links in the show notes to these items we're talking about. But rumor is that they're going to be announcing a new 7-inch tablet. And if rumors hold to be true, and you know how rumors are, a 7-inch tablet priced at around $199 and $249 is from the news articles. And I'll put a link in the show notes to those articles. But that's certainly going to change the game, because I really believe for education, students, and parents, that $199 mark to me is kind of a magic price point.
Right. Once you go over that, then it turns into, for most of us, it's a major purchase.
It is. It is. I mean, you know, even at $200, right, and, you know, given if you have 2, 3, 4, you know, children, yeah, it certainly adds up. That I think is going to change the game again.
I'm curious, does the different sized tablets and that marketing too? I mean, are the, you know, you have the 7-inch and then you have the iPad size and that. And so I'm just curious if those are different audiences buying those different sizes, mm-hmm, and if one's more popular than the other.
Well, I think we're still finding our way through that. You know, going from the cell phone, you know, we've got the 3.5-inch screens all the way up to about the 5-inch screens. I mean, right, cell phones are kind of, you know, bloating up and getting larger and larger.
They are.
So it comes at that point, you know, what's pocketable? And you get much beyond 5 inches, and, you know, that won't fit in your shirt pocket. True. Or whatever. But at the same time, it's like you start gaining that screen real estate, and the 7-inch tablet, as, you know, as you increase that screen size, the area really squares, you know,
right,
length times width.
Right.
So you're gaining more surface area for viewing. And, you know, the 7-inch, if you've had a Kindle, and I don't know if you've played around with the little 7-inch Kindles, mm-hmm, that's just a sweet little spot because you can hold it in one hand.
Right.
Much bigger than 7 inches, you know, it gets too, you know, too wide to hold in one hand.
Right.
And then, of course, the 10-inch, like the iPad and the Microsoft Surface, and Google has several 10-inch tablets. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're going bigger, and I expect this to continue. Toshiba has a 13-inch one I saw.
A tablet?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So we're increasing those skies. And with Microsoft Surface and everything all being one, I mean, I foresee them just going to be like a monitor. They're just going to keep,
exactly,
getting larger and,
right,
larger.
Because for productivity, I personally feel, even with my bifocals, I need a bigger screen.
Mm-hmm.
And the smaller ones just sometimes, mm-hmm, don't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so while for just communication, I like the small.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to any kind of productivity, I want a bigger.
Right. Screen. And the market's still working this out. There's still, you know, I hope we're in the stage of let 1,000 flowers bloom out there, because there's not one device that's going to suit all audiences, as,
right,
you said. But I do see these things getting larger and larger. In fact, I kind of imagine not too long from now, probably in the next 3 to 5 years, we'll have one as large as a newspaper.
Really?
So,
maybe replacing our desktops completely?
I firmly believe that. This convergence of things that's going on, you know, with that added USB port on the side, you can plug in a USB keyboard.
True.
Get your, you know, the other innovation on that Microsoft Surface tablet they made a big deal was it had a little kickstand out that you,
right,
so put it, out and put out right in front of you.
So it does feel like a desktop.
Yeah, that's where I believe we're moving.
Yeah.
And you've got the flexibility, the keyboard with that cover that goes over it. It attaches with magnets, so it's very easy to pull on and pull off when you want that productivity where you're typing. You can,
right,
do that. But I find, you know, in the Ultrabook, we recently received a Dell XPS 13 Ultrabook, and I just love that form factor. The only thing that I miss from that is the touchscreen.
Right.
If this Ultrabook had the touchscreen, I'm kind of back to my little Transformer e-pad that I'm getting so used to. And you kind of have the best of all those worlds with the keyboard, the touch input, and then having those external ports for USB, micro SD, and then the HDMI to connect to large screen TVs or projectors.
Right, right. So you can use it. And then, you know, too, with the smart screen, I've noticed, because I don't use a smart board all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's sporadic. And I found the more I've used the iPad and the touch screens with those,
mm-hmm,
that I get back into my smart board groove a lot,
mm-hmm,
quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see that. You do see these common factors right. that are coming together with right. what well, we're using.
Yeah, and if you watch children today, I mean, coming into the lab or anything, the first thing they want to do is touch a screen, whether right. it's a touch screen or not. So
yeah, and my two-year-old niece, you know, would paint on the iPad, and
everything's a touchscreen to
them. Absolutely.
It's like what they're growing up with.
I'm sure that's wreaking havoc on TVs all across America.
I'm sure it is. And then the other thing we've not mentioned, but two other input mechanisms is speech, voice recognition,
right.
which is coming a long way. They're going to be making some Xbox announcements, and along with the Kinect with the gestures. They're making some improvements there. And I'm starting to see articles where hospitals are starting to use some of those, like surgeons and things. So instead, you know, with operating gloves and things on, you don't want to be touching a lot of things. Right. But if you had a Kinect that you could like wave your hand to turn to the next X-ray or whatever it is that you're wanting to look at.
Very cool.
So there's some, you know, as these technologies come along, you know, depending upon what field, you're finding uses for them. So
sure.
it's a very exciting time. And then lastly, another rumor here at the end of June is I just saw Amazon may be getting ready for their Kindle 2. You know, their Kindle Fire came out last November and kind of set the world on fire for the first 2-3 months and not heard a lot about it here recently, although, you know, I'm sure they're still selling. But it's in the works for an upgrade.
Well, just in time for Christmas.
Just in time for Christmas. So I'm holding off. I'm kind of in the market for making a purchase. And, you know, this Google 7-inch tablet, that one's going to be very tempting. So we'll see where we're at the end of this week.
We may have to synchronize our shopping list and you get one, I'll get the
That's
other.
That's what we really need to do to right. really explore some of the strengths and weaknesses of these, because things are just changing so fast. My technology pick of the week this week has to do with flipped learning. You know, June's kind of the month for conferences, so there's a number of educational conferences going on. In fact, right now, the end of June, the ISTE, I-S-T-E, the International Society for Technology and Education Conference is going on.
Huge conference.
The largest conference out there, and I think I saw, don't quote me, but I think I saw 16,000 attendees or something.
Wow.
So, you know, it's a huge educational technology conference. So that's going on, and just a little tip, if those of you that have a PLN and Twitter and things, they're using the hashtag #ISTE12. So if you go out and do a Twitter search on ISTE12, you will find all the attendees out there making little comments about what's going on in the conference.
Right. See what some of the highlights mm-hmm. are for folks.
And that's a good way for those of us left back at home to experience it at least virtually, but tons of good resources and people sharing things out. So be sure to check that out. But back to flipped learning, there was also a flipped learning conference up in Chicago this month. And they were providing a couple of free streams. It was a paid conference, but they did stream out a couple of the keynote speakers. So, again, you know, one of the advantages of Twitter is if you have people in your network, every now and then you'll see a tweet come across saying, hey, we're live streaming now the keynote, and I happened to catch a couple of those.
Very cool.
So, again, you know, couldn't be there in person, but hearing from some of the, you know, top educators that have kind of lived and breathed this flipped learning experience. Another thing that came out, because I am a promoter of the flipped learning model, and this is a good thing, we're starting to get some criticisms and things of it because, you know, in education we tend to jump on bandwagons and kind of have these fads from time to time. And flipped learning is kind of starting to get that feel a little bit. But I'll also provide in the show notes for my tech pick of the week, there was a blog post by a couple of teachers critiquing one of the videos of the Khan Academy teaching math.
Oh.
And it was kind of satirical. They were just kind of going through making comments as like a new learner learning this material. And it just kind of goes to show you that there's so much to teaching and learning, you know, just kind of going through. And the one thing that really stuck out in the critique was Saul Khan was just going through multiplying positive and negative numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And the very last thing that he did was he mentioned what happens when you multiply two positive numbers together. Well, whenever we teach, we want to go from the known to the unknown, trying to make those connections and things.
Sure.
So that's just kind of, you know, and you can pick apart anybody. So, I mean, I really do think Saul Kahn's doing a lot of good work, and he's really putting himself out there for some critique. So you're going to get both the praise and, you know, praise and slings and arrows and things as well.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And everybody has a slightly different twist on pedagogy.
Yes. And you know, that's the difficult thing. We're in teacher education program at our university. And, you know, everybody wants to know what's the best way to teach, and that's, there is not, you know, there is not one way, there are many.
If you have a classroom of 24, you have 24 different ways right. that you need to teach.
That's right. And, you know, my tech pick, I'm going to provide a link to that flipped learning conference.
Awesome.
And there is a video page that I'll link to in particular. And if you want to get up to speed a little bit on the pluses and the minuses, and these are from real teachers out there in the field that have been doing this for the last 5 years, I've got a link to a video page and some excellent, excellent video interviews and just kind of the
some
philosophy.
Honest
yes.
feedback.
Yeah, both positive and negative and how it's changing. And it's not for everybody, but you know, this is what teaching's about, sharing our experiences and sharing with others what's working, what's not working, how do we constantly improve. And let me see if I can go out there real quick, because there's a video on this page that I'll link to. I think it's like the third or the fourth link down. His name's Steve Kelly. Steve Kelly talks to the Michigan State Board of Education about why he flipped his classes, and it's about 4 minutes long. So if you're interested in that, be sure. And that's from a practicing, you know, classroom teacher that's been out in the classroom
been
for a
there.
While.
You're right.
And then it's interesting seeing some of our new teacher education pre-service students coming out into the field with, you know, some of these different perspectives. So those are my tech picks for the week.
Very cool. Well, my tech pick this week is sort of it's got a tech slant to it. The Library of Congress this week had a press release and announced their books that shaped America. But they went through and created this list of the books that they felt shaped America. And so you can go through, see what the list is. And it ties in with the National Book Festival while we're talking about conferences and things that's going to be in September. But one of the really neat things on it, they have a survey that you can take. And they're going to do other future lists, apparently. And so they ask questions, and it's just a real simple survey, but it says, you know, look over this inaugural list of books that shaped America, and they were written in America by Americans and had a profound impact on our nation. Which three do you think shaped America most profoundly?
Well, it's hard to pick.
Oh, absolutely. Because first of all, I'm looking at the ones that I've actually read, and there are a lot of them that I think I need to read that, you know. And that, but the different walks of life and experiences that are represented by the list.
And we can put those on our summer reading list out there.
Absolutely.
So those are some things out there.
But we're ranging, you know, from the 1700s to, and I'm not sure what the most modern or most recent.
I'm not sure it was Grapes of Wrath and things like that going in.
Yeah, there were.
So, you know.
We have the 60s represented.
Okay.
That's about as new. No, 2002, The Words of Cesar Chavez.
Okay.
So you've got a nice range, but each of those books represent a different time in history. And so it's like,
time
wow.
and viewpoint and experience.
Absolutely. And so it's like, how the heck do we pick the three that, you know, we mean the most to us? But again, that's what makes America what it is. You know, the joy of cooking is on there. So you got to love that one. And all, but and then it just, you know, ask which ones touched your life the most personally. So it has people really look at these books and think about them again and why they read them. And I know one of the things it did for me was made me realize I need to reread.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of these books that I read in high school or middle school or even in my undergraduate program, because I was in language arts, so I was reading in English. Mm-hmm. And there are many of these that I haven't read since then. And I think I need to read those now that I'm a mother and an adult.
Yeah.
And I think it will have a whole different meaning to me now.
Yeah. Speaking of rereading the things, and I can't remember if we talked about this on our last podcast, but Ray Bradbury passed away.
Yeah.
So I grew up on a lot of sci-fi and things in middle school in particular, reading a lot of those books and things. So it would be interesting going back and rereading those.
Well, and you know, tying that with technology, when Maurice Sendak passed away on Facebook, I couldn't believe how many my son's friends were commenting on his passing, and then links to interviews he did with people and that were just hilarious. But these young people were sharing about him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just when I think, you know, they don't care about reading, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, it did matter when we read Where the Wild Things Are mm-hmm. when they were little and all of that. And these memories mm-hmm. do stick with them and impact their lives. And when these authors pass away, it does impact mm-hmm. them. And so it's good that we're doing these things and sharing with our students and trying to get excitement yeah. building again. Now, if I could just find an app that had them all in one package, that would be really nice. Mm-hmm.
Some of the probably the pre-1920 things might be out there on Project Gutenberg.
You know, I think I saw
as ebooks.
Leaves of Grass, I believe, is a free book in iBooks, and okay. I have that downloaded. Uh-huh. And so there are a few of those old ones, and a very good idea. That's mm-hmm. a great idea.
And then also, there. You know, things that I think, you know, sometimes we forget about our local libraries and things, of course, will have, you know, I would think that they would have most on that list.
Sure.
But electronically, a while back, My Media Mall was one of our tech picks, and we talked about ebooks. And here at EIU, for those of you on EIU's campus, Booth Library does offer the My Media Mall, and both whether it be audiobook or a PDF or an ebook, an EPUB, a Kindle, you know, whatever version those are.
And I have not used that. And I'm going
to get you hooked up
today.
I'm going to get you hooked up with that.
I'm going to do it today.
That wraps it up for episode 133 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/itc. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
And Sid Rich.
Keep on learning.